Well, a big thanks to Darren and the team for driving us through the afternoon. It is Monday, May 26th, and you're listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
And coming up now, between now and the new music show, even at 7pm, Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly will review the entire Premier League season that limped to a finish yesterday afternoon for everyone bar Liverpool fans. Niall Moran chats through all the big provincial hurling talking points, and in rugby, Stephen Ferris will review Bordeaux's Champions Cup victory.
Plus, we'll round up our weekend sporting highlights and today's news headlines. So if you want to get in touch, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200 or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Good evening, Ruby Walsh.
How are you, Shane?
I'm very well. I'm very well.
Alan Cawley.
Shane, Ruby. My favourite people on a Monday. How are we?
Good, and yourself?
Good, very good.
Despite the weather, we're all full of cheer because we are reflecting on our weekend sporting highlights and going through today's news and chatting Premier League football. And for Liverpool fans watching on, as I saw, there's a few people going around Liverpool at the moment, Al.
Just a few. Can there be any more parades? There's a lot to be said for a parade at the moment. Every time I turn on the television, it looks like some club is having a parade. Was it always like that?
I think if you win the league, I don't know, Manchester City maybe, I think off the top of my head they did have an event at the ground, which certainly wasn't as well populated as Liverpool parade at the moment. Palace are having a parade, PSG are having a parade, Napoli, Naples.
Spurs had one.
Arsenal had one, didn't they?
Yeah.
Oh, they did, to be fair. Sure, it's in horse racing, you know, all those famous walking down the streets. Lachlan Bridge.
But I would have thought... Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but a parade is for something big.
Liverpool's 20th.
Yeah, Liverpool,
top
fair enough.
Title.
But Crystal Palace.
Winning their first ever
Would you have a parade? I know it's amazing, and I praised them all last week, and I loved the story of it. Would you have a parade?
No, hold on a sec. You're big enough. You were over the moon with Palace's
I love Palace,
victory.
Yeah.
So surely they should have their parade.
I don't know about the parade thing.
I missed the Shells one last year. Where was that?
It was in Talca Park. There was great scenes in Talca Park, actually.
You won't be at one this year for Shells, I tell you that much, Ruby, after what I watched on Friday night.
There was a homecoming. Richmond Road was closed off, Ruby, so there was a homecoming. Sorry, what do you watch? You watch a John Martin hat-trick for Shells to defeat Sligo 3-2. If we're getting into weekend sporting highlights, we can start there if you want, Cawley.
I have a few for you, don't worry, but they won't be winning any league. Dare I said it now, before I've even been asked, to be winning no league title this year.
You're obviously not on talking terms with Damien Duff then. Not now, anyway.
No, they're just, it's been a struggle for them, Ruby. It really has so far. And the limped
injury
over.
Injury crisis.
Oh, yeah, and that's fair enough. And Paddy Barrett's a big loss. And they have a few injuries. But just in terms of, I think they'll be fine and they'll be probably get into Europe. But in terms of maybe defending their title, I can't see that happening at all. It's just been too much of a struggle off the back of last season as well. And I think if the carryover into this season has continued in terms of the results, I think that was their 10th win in 31 matches. If you include the end of last season. So you look at the form of Shamrock Rovers as well, Ruby, this year. And I know we're not getting into Irish football, but...
No, we can. Friday night is the weekend if you're going there.
It was a much needed win. Owen Elding scored the goal of the weekend. If you haven't seen it, Ruby, check it out. And there's a young player who's going places. I've been so impressed with him every time I've seen him, but Friday night he was brilliant again. But I just think Shells, the bigger picture, winning the league, I can't see it happening.
Yeah, there'll be a parade in Talla Stadium, or in Talla.
Yeah. It looks ominous for everybody else at the moment, yeah.
Simple as that, yeah.
It is as simple as that, I think,
procession. Yeah. Processions and parades.
What was your sporting highlight then, Al? Because it definitely wasn't Shells beating Rover Street.
No, definitely. Well, it was something else on Friday night. So I'll start with Friday night. Scott McTominay winning the league with Napoli and getting player of the year off the back of the doldrums that he went through at Manchester United, like so many others. And it's like as if he's escaped from their clutches of doom and gloom and turned his whole life around. And he's become a hero in a city that only has one god, and that's Maradona. And the next in line to him is Scott McTominay. Who would have thought it? But it's a brilliant story. Conte as well, I'm a big fan of. They won the league obviously on Friday night. Then it carried into...
Did Anthony score on Friday night as well, or did he score on Saturday?
He scored, yeah.
Anthony
scored as well. He's another one, but I'd have no time for him. I'd have Scott McTominay any day. I wouldn't have Anthony. So let him go with Garnacho and the rest of them wherever they're going.
But let's debate this one. Stephen Kelly will be joining us very shortly. But isn't it mad how just players can flourish when they leave the toxic
Rashford
environment?
Rashford is another one.
And then you bring players in and you go through like the worst signings of the season, and you can see on your hand, you could probably count all the Manchester United signings.
There's obviously something in the whole
something in the
environment and the culture and what's going on. Like, there has to be.
Well, it was
go on, what was your Saturday?
Flagged by Ralph Ragnick many years ago.
What was Saturday? I had one for Saturday.
We can go back to
right. Ryan Moore was the next one.
Oh, yeah.
You like this one, Ruby. Ryan Moore, and I hope I'm not stealing your thunder, but
no.
he put on, well, he's done it many times. He's put on a masterclass. And this one you will love, because I think it was a four winners he had, I counted four.
Yeah.
And an honourable mention has to go to Katie Walsh, the sister of Ruby, because it's a tough job to interview Ryan Moore, and she done it admirably four times, getting blood out of a stone, and each time she had something different up her sleeve, and I thought Katie was absolutely brilliant as well, because he's a tough man to get words out of, but I'm a big fan of Ryan Moore, a brilliant jockey, so Katie as well, and of course the other Katie that won the Champions League, an honourable mention, so two Katies, so there's the highlights, Ruby.
Yeah. A fair read of him. What about you saying, Dawson?
John Martin's hat-trick on Friday night, of course. No, listen, Arsenal achieving the Women's Champions League against all odds, like no one gave them a chance pretty much. And it is great to see another Irish person lift silverware. I was going to quiz you, Alan, about all the previous winners of the European Cup, but we could be here for a while, so we'll leave that for the moment.
How many is there in total?
I think there's 15 or so. John O'Shea, Steve Finnan, Dennis Aaron, Roy Keane, Michael Robinson, Mark Lawrenson, Roddy Whelan, Stevie Highway, Tony Dunn, Shea Brennan, Charlie Gallagher, Emma Byrne, Kira Grant, Yvonne Tracy, and now Katie McCabe.
Wow, good list.
So Katie McCabe, the second former Shells player. After Tony Dunn with United in the late 60s, but however, Katie's achievement is brilliant. To see an Irish person win a European trophy, I mean, it's just phenomenal.
Cursing an injury afterwards.
No,
be better than that.
The cursing today wasn't ideal. She was enjoying herself. She was enjoying herself at the parade.
Be better.
Not a parade, but the homecoming in London as well. Katie, before we get your highlights, Ruby, just on the topic as well, Louise Quinn was on media, of course, Ireland against Turkey this Friday. You can hear live Women's Nations League coverage on Game On on Friday. Louise Quinn was speaking to the media about that victory for Katie McCabe and indeed Arsenal.
For me, obviously, just an amazing club. They always, you know, even when I was there, how many years ago? I would have been there like 7 years ago now. But just always did their best to support the players, gave, you know, everything that they could. And that's just got better and better and better. And in terms of the club that Arsenal are, so they just had this magic run in Europe. And it just, you know, I before going into it, yeah, I probably didn't think they were going to win just in terms of the form, like not even Arsenal's form. I know they had a bit of a bad run coming into it, but just Barcelona, just so dominant. And I don't know, as soon as the game just started, I could just see that they, in terms of the shape and just keeping Barcelona wide, and, you know, even Katie probably wasn't getting up the pitch as much, but I think it just kind of didn't leave them any of those gaps. And I just thought they were clinical, making really good chances. And, you know, I was fairly cool and calm going into the second half. And then like Blackstenius came on and I started to get like, I was like, she could do something now. And I'm there holding Dara. And I also said to Ailish, I was like, if Katie scores, like, I'm going to freak out. Like, she was like, right, like, give me our son, like, you know, you cannot. She was like, do not frighten the crap out of him. But then, and then just when they scored, I just, honestly, I was like, they are going to do it now. I just didn't see Barca scoring at all. Defensively, they were so sound. Like, you know, Leah Williamson was fantastic. Like, literally the entire, you know, for me, the back line. And then probably didn't see as much of Kim Little and, you know, Mariona a little bit in terms of what they can do. But then they were just, you know, when they had the opportunities to drive forward and do all of that, I was just absolutely delighted for them. And obviously Katie is, just so deserving. I'm just so proud of her. I just couldn't believe it, just where she's come from, and obviously seeing and just playing, you know, in the League of Ireland or the National League with her all those years ago, and getting to play with her and just seeing now, and she just stepped up. She totally stepped up to the plate on the biggest club stage that you can get, and she's just done us all so proud. I just can't believe it. I actually can't believe it. I'm going to feel weird when she comes into camp here. It's just going to be, you know, I'm just so delighted for her. But she deserves it. She's been in that squad consistently for how many years? So, you know, she's always one of the first names on the team sheet. And yeah, she deserves that. A club like Arsenal deserves that. And they proved it through the whole tournament, but especially just on the day to keep out what is the best team in the world.
So Louise Quinn speaking there ahead of the big match on Friday, and indeed on Katie McCabe's achievement over the weekend for Arsenal. Not a great role model today, but a great achievement, I think, is the fair synopsis. Ruby, what was your weekend sporting highlight?
I must say I enjoyed the Curragh. I thought Fields of Gold was brilliant in the 2000 Guineas on Saturday under Colin Keane for John and Thady Gosden. I thought it was great to see so many English runners at the Curragh. 3 winners trained in the UK. 8 different trainers had success on Saturday at the Curragh on a 9 race card. And obviously Los Angeles, Lake Victoria, Port of Fortuna, all big winners yesterday afternoon. But my sporting highlight was probably Mathieu Jalibert in the first half in the Millennium Stadium for Bordeaux against Northampton. It was just like watching Messi play soccer. Like, his foot moving for the try when he passed it over the head to the big second row to score. He was just phenomenal to watch.
Yeah.
An artist at work.
No, that match in general, I think the first half was the most points scored in a Champions Cup finals.
Yeah, 20 apiece at half time.
Like, an absolutely unbelievable. I know you're not the biggest rugby man, Alan,
but as a
sporting event, it lived up to all expectations. Because, you know, finals often don't. And they can be a bit drab, but Bordeaux and Northampton both play their part.
But don't the play was isn't forwards coach Ruby getting a lot of praise for
McNamara?
Is it?
He's an Irish
because
man.
Of the way they play. Yeah,
yeah. No, they were magic. Now I know when you have Jalibert and then you have Beale, Beery and Penno on the wings or whatever, they have an incredible backline. But just to watch Jalibert conduct the orchestra, basically.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely amazing. 51552 is the text number. Good World Cup draw for Ireland under 17s yesterday. Talented team who will hopefully get out of the group, says Kieran in Mead. Owen Elding's goal on Friday. There's some brilliant young players in both League of Ireland divisions, says an unnamed texter. You were on your phone there, Ali. You're just trying to emphasise your point there. Are you texting into the show as well? You're backing up your point even further. Who knows?
It was a weekend for them. Look, Elding, Noonan, Melia. Melia's goal is brilliant at the weekend.
No, it absolutely was. United could have got Conte. He won leagues everywhere, says JJ. Great to see Queevin Kelleher with his Premier League medal yesterday. Great achievement, and he made a real contribution to their season. And how can you talk about weekend sporting highlights and not mention Aberdeen's extraordinary victory over Celtic in the Scottish Cup final? First Scottish Cup win for Aberdeen since 1990 and first win over Celtic in 30 games, says Owen and Kalini, a long-suffering Aberdeen fan.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Owen, and another Scottish friend of mine texted in saying the same thing. And funny enough, I was watching it as well because I flicked over for the extra time because Johnny Kenny had come on for Celtic. He scored his penalty as well, Johnny, but obviously Callum McGregor missed it. And I thought there was a brilliant interview afterwards with Aberdeen's captain, Graham Shinney. And I also saw on the homecoming, he's a local lad as well. And I've kind of followed him around the lower leagues, Graham Shinney, because I remember being at a match years ago he's playing and he was always took me eye. He was a good player. But back at his hometown club and to win, I think it was their first cup in 35 years. Is that what even Ona said there? So it was a fantastic achievement. Beating Celtic as well. Now, it was a bit like the Alamo for large spells, and Kasper Schmeichel made an absolute howler as well, of all howlers. But still, you have to ride your luck. And Aberdeen, a great story, great club. And yeah, sorry, Owen.
Is it okay for Aberdeen to have a homecoming?
Yeah, absolutely. In that instance, I've done a U-turn on the homecomings. They can all have them and the parades.
They can absolutely all have them.
But it just feels like there's a lot this year.
But there's a lot of great stories.
Yeah, maybe. That's
there's a lot of brilliant, beautiful stories.
Yeah. And I love the good stories.
In football and across the world. Next time, Ruby, there's a big win. You're going to get you down to Lachlan Bridge. And, you know,
I want to come to that
one. The parochial sense of things.
It's not invitation only. Like, I mean, it is like a parade. Anyone can go on.
Yeah, but I want you to give me VIP access.
Elsewhere news headlines today. Erik ten Hag has been appointed as the new head coach of Bayer Leverkusen. The former Manchester United manager signed a contract running until June 2027 to take charge of the team following the departure of Xabi Alonso, who was confirmed as the new Real Madrid boss on a Sunday. Paul Corrie and Mark Langdon will be rounding up all of the European football news in detail with Ruby and Marie. Is back tomorrow as well, so we'll dig into that then. And just briefly before we take an ad break and chat Premier League with Stephen Kelly, Leinster rugby head coach Leo Cullen has said that Robbie Henshaw has been ruled out of action for the next 3 to 4 weeks with a knee injury, which will rule him out of action for the remainder of the Leinster rugby season ahead of Saturday's URC quarterfinal against Scarlets at the Aviva Stadium. Leinster will also be without prop Tadhg Furlong after he picked up a minor calf injury, and it's understood that his participation in the upcoming Lions series is not at risk, so good news in that regard for Tadhg Furlong. Munster rugby have departed for Durban for Saturday Saturday's URC quarterfinal against the Sharks. Jack Crowley, Dermot Barron and Noel Scannell have all been past fit and are available for selection as Jeremy Lachman also returns. Okay, Stephen Kelly is standing by. We're going to review the Premier League season in detail with Alan and Stephen. Stay with us here in Game On.
Game On. Association football.
Welcome back to Game On, where we are going to have a look back at the Premier League season that was. Stephen Kelly, do you think Liverpool are right? Arsenal are right? Parades? They've won trophies. Where do you stand on that one?
Well, Arsenal don't get pregnant. They won nothing. Let's put that
the ladies
straight.
Did. The Champions League. The Women's Champions
men's,
League.
Men, sorry. Champions League, yes. Sorry. Yes, listen. Honestly, if Chelsea were to win the Conference League and they don't have a parade, I would say, listen, they've won more trophies than any team in the country in the last 20 years, so they probably don't feel like that's right, potentially. But when you look at Spurs, when you look at Crystal Palace, when you look at Newcastle and Liverpool win the Premier League for the second season, you have to celebrate those achievements. I actually really think 230,000 people turned out on the Seven Sisters Road to support Tottenham. So I think it was worth it in the end.
There you are now, Alan Colley. 30,000 people, more than to get into the stadium, turned up to watch the welcome them home and they won something. That's what it's about.
And go back to the Premier League. At the weekend.
I know.
Well, sorry, on that note, would you, Alan Colley, prefer to finish second in the Premier League and get to a Champions League semi-final, or would you prefer if your team finished 17th in the league but have a Europa League trophy to hand?
Yeah, this question has cropped up a lot, obviously, in recent weeks. I'd be more... You have me on the spot here now, Shane, right?
Alan, there's only one answer here.
It wasn't so much, obviously, that I was begrudging Spurs. It's amazing to win the Europa League and the Cup and the success and all that. And as Stephen said, you see the people on the streets and the story and all that. But the season was so disgraceful. It wasn't even poor. It was a disgrace. Followed by, again, like, finished off appropriately yesterday, getting hammered. So that's why I was a bit like... I'm not sure about them. Like, they don't have a lot to be jumping around about, even though Postecoglou, kind of in his arrogance now, is sticking the fingers up to everyone. But I don't know.
Stephen Kelly?
I'll say it every single time. You don't get many opportunities in your life, as your career, as a player, to win a trophy. So as a player, 100,000,000% I'm taking with. I would take, genuinely, honest to God, I think I would take winning the Europa League and getting relegated.
No.
Carly. Okay, how many trophies do you have, or many medals from major tournaments do you have in your career? Like
just the one major one.
There you go. Would you not give anything to have another one?
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to be bottom of the table.
I would take relegation and a major medal in that season, absolutely, hands down, without question of doubt. I've played my whole career and I've got Europa League semi-final, I've got Europa League runners-up medal, I've got a runners-up medal from the Championship, and I've played at the top division, played in the Premier League for 15 years. Like, amazing. Play Ireland caps, captain of my country, unbelievable. I would give anything to have a gold medal. I'm telling you now, 100,000,000%, I take getting relegated to win it, an FA Cup, a Europa League Cup, a Champions League, anything like that to get a medal. No question, as a player, I'd be gutted, but I wouldn't even, the next day I'd be looking at a medal of gold. It was worth it.
It's simple, lads. Professionals, it's only about winning. Second is nowhere.
Now, that's fair. When Stephen puts it like that, in fairness, it makes a strong case. I just think this whole Spurs thing, it's just, for me, I can't separate how bad the season has been to just then them winning that cup.
So it could have been worse.
So I want to see him just see how we go. I don't even know if he'll be there. Like, Daniel Levy has the biggest decision ever to make, I'd say.
I think he's there. I honestly was sitting on the fence. I was like, I'm not too sure what's going to happen. Now I'm like, I don't know. The fact that they've got Champions League on the back of that as well, and obviously, listen, that's a different debate whether they deserve that and have them win the Europa League. But the fact they've got Champions League and they've got a medal, that's something that no manager's been able to deliver, I suppose. I think he cannot sack them. In the first couple of months, if it goes really bad, then he'd be gone. But I don't think he does it now.
Would you like him to remain, Stephen?
I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not sure whether I'd like him to remain. I think it'd be extremely harsh to sack him after winning the medal. I think, how can you do that? How can you sack a manager after winning the first major trophy in, 17 years? And it's a big European one. So I don't think you can. Whether he can get better performances out of, I think the last few weeks, what he's shown in the Europa League, though, is something that we questioned the whole way through the season. Was like, Why can't they defend? Why can't they set the team up properly? Why can't, when they take the lead, they just know how to be pragmatic and work the game out properly? And then they go and do it in Europa League. Listen, they hung on at the end against United. They weren't great, but they did stuff that they haven't done. They weren't going gung-ho on fullbacks playing as tens and doing stupid stuff. He actually showed a side of this game that was tactically astute, and you're going, well, why didn't you just do that in the league? If you can actually do that, if your players are capable of doing that, why didn't you do that in the league? So there's the question marks, but you know what, he's shown that he does have that side to him, which is, you know, maybe that works again next season. I don't know.
Right, Alan. 12 months ago, Jurgen Klopp was leaving. Could you see Liverpool sitting where they are now?
No, Ruby, I don't think many could, to be fair. I didn't think they'd be kind of down languishing mid-table or anything. I thought they'd still be in the European places because he left a very good team, as we know, for Slot to come into. So it wasn't like he was walking into a difficult job, if you like. Difficult maybe to try and replace Klopp and the charismatic, eccentric figure that he has and the love that he had in the city. And I think we've seen a glimpse of that yesterday, even in back at the stadium. And we even seen a glimpse of it almost, the speech that he made in defence of Trent, and the whole kind of Liverpool supporters have almost done a U-turn a little bit because Klopp has said, come out and defend him. So that's the power that Klopp had. So it was very difficult for any manager to walk into his shoes. But what I love about what Slot has done is he has walked into his shoes, but he's walked into them in a completely different way, with so much kind of groundedness and humility, and let his football do the talking, and has tweaked the team a little bit. But I think it's the sign of a good manager that doesn't try and come in and I suppose show the egotistical side of a manager trying to put his stamp all over something that's not broken at all, and just made little tweaks. I thought the move of Gravenberch into that kind of defensive position as the number six was a masterclass really in management and doing that and getting him to the level that he has got to. So no, Ruby, to answer your question, I couldn't see it, but I think he deserves all the plaudits in the world, Slot, because I think he's done an unbelievable job. And I actually think now, if we're to look 12 months on, I think even though a lot of the clubs will be better next year and be stronger, and we would hope that you'd see some sort of a better title race, I think they're the team to beat.
Stephen Kelly, would you agree? And if someone can, Arsenal, City, even Chelsea, what do each of them have to do to catch up with Liverpool?
Bring in players. Arsenal centre forward, City are in a rebuilding situation at the moment. Players going out the door. Newcastle don't think they have it in them for a full season to really compete against the Liverpools. And I think the confidence that this group has now. And Liverpool aren't resting on the laurels. You can see they're quite active in the market already. They're trying to bring in players to replace who they're losing, to add additions to the forward areas. I think it's a remarkable job, absolutely remarkable job. I think the worry of going on the back of someone like Klopp is you're going in after like a legacy manager, like someone that has done something, and you're thinking, oh God, is that going to be a Ferguson? But I think he left them with a great squad, and to go in there and just fine-tune it the way he did, not drastically change, just fine-tune it with the way the players played, keeping the players are fit, that made a difference. Whether he changed training regime, whether it wasn't as intense, those things, potentially could have helped the squad as well. But I think it's a remarkable job to go and win the Premier League in your fourth season on the back of what was one of the club's best ever managers. So that was going to be no easy feat. And he did it at Canter. He cruised through it. Looked so comfortable in all his decisions as well.
From an Irish angle, gentlemen, Nathan Collins was a mainstay. Seamus Coleman has one more year. There's the Evan Ferguson dilemma. Troy Parrott, who knows where his future may lie, be it back in England or remaining in the Netherlands. But Kevin Kelleher, more likely not to be leaving Liverpool. Let's hear from him now.
I think I've said it before as well, that like I feel like I'm a number one, and I think I'm good enough to play week in, week out, and that's what I'm looking to do, obviously. This season, you know, I was lucky enough to play a lot of games, but yeah, definitely something I'm looking at.
Is it good to hear comments like that, Alan, to show his desire and his drive and his motivation to be playing first team football?
Yeah, 100%. And he's right in everything that he has said, Shane. He served his time now, and he's proved that even when he did get his opportunity at Liverpool, and they had the full belief in having him as their number one as well, which I think is the biggest compliment to Kelleher, with world class players having absolutely no issue whatsoever with him as their keeper. So I do think he needs to get out and play. The example I would use is the likes of Dean Henderson at Crystal Palace, and he gets out and plays every week, becomes the main man, becomes a mainstay, wins the cup, has a parade. No, but joking. Obviously wins the cup, played a huge pivotal role in that as well. So I think that's the what Kelleher should be earmarking. And I think there's talk of Leeds, but I think he could go to a higher club. That's no disrespect to Leeds. Leeds are a huge club. But what I mean is someone who's maybe more established in the Premier Division and higher up the table. So I think he needs to do that.
And doing the likes of a Leeds, Stephen, need a Queeveen Gallagher. You look at Southampton, Ipswich, Leicester, straight up, straight back down with, and never looked like anything else. What do Leeds have to do to stay up?
Yeah, it's... I think when they come up, I think they'll be slightly different than what they were before. I think they're going to try and build, they're trying to add to that squad. I think Queeveen Keller, I think the goalkeeper at Leeds, I can't remember his name, it's gone in my head.
Mellier,
that's it, yeah. I actually think at times he can be wonderful, but he's just, he's thrown in so many goals and there's big worries about his confidence levels. So Queeveen going in there will be great for him, but I wouldn't want to see him end up like a Ramsdale, going to a team that's just going to get peppered every season. And that, yeah, listen, he works really hard and he might look fantastic, but the chances are, the way the Premier League is going with the strength in the division, you know, two seasons in a row, I think all three teams have come up and gone back down, and that's going to be tough, I think. So, yeah, I'd like Alan said, I'd love to see him go to a more established side that have stability playing in Europe potentially. Like, to be honest, I look at the top five, top six teams and thinking, yeah, Queeveen could probably potentially push. You look at Chelsea, I think he could push him. Like, I'm not sure that they'd sell to Chelsea, but you're looking at the players that they have, you go, could he push those players? Is he potentially better than them in the future? I actually think he potentially could. Even Tottenham are looking for Cario, and I go, you know what, someone like Queeveen could go in there and give him a run for his money. So, but he doesn't want to play second fiddle. He wants to go in and be first choice, and that's the dilemma.
Villa, I think Emi Martinez might be on the way out.
Good shout. So
it could be an option in there. Is there a concern, Alan, about this wider systemic issue, about the growing gulf between the two tiers? I know Stephen mentioned there, it's, what, second year in a row now that three promoted sides have been relegated?
Yeah, I think it has to be a concern. The gulf is, it's becoming astronomical. You look at Leicester, Ipswich, Southampton there this year, and they weren't even in with a fight. Southampton were gone 2-3 months ago, Leicester and Ipswich gone probably 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, so that's not good. To answer Ruby's question there just about what Leeds need to do, and this is where I think some of those clubs coming up from the division make the mistake. They're still trying to play in the Premier League the way they were playing in the Championship. And certainly in terms of the modern way and playing out from the back, like Russell Martin, the prime example, but not just him, some of the others as well. And it's madness, it's absolute madness, because one, obviously you're playing against the elite players, you get punished for one mistake, whereas in the Championship you might get away with the odd mistake, two or three, you're going to get punished. So I think that's something that the managers have to learn from as well when they come up, that it's okay to change. Even though you might be kind of being successful in a certain way in the Championship, that doesn't mean you can go up to the Premier League and replicate it. I think you have to crawl before you walk, and sometimes I think the managers have to understand that, making the jump. And then there's no harm in just having a year where you finish 17th, 16th, and that's success, and then try and implement your style, the likes of what maybe a Thomas Frank has done at Brentford. Like, he's the prime example of bringing a club up, establishing them, and then putting his stamp all over in terms of being a proper Premier League club. I think he's a brilliant manager, so that's what I think. But there's already talk that Fark, the Leeds manager, could be gone, which I don't know, is crazy. I think
you know what would be interesting, it'd be Burnley. They've 30 clean sheets last season in the Championship, which is the most ever recorded, and you kind of think, does that put you in a better position to try and stay in the Premier League? You go up and you survive and you're defensively solid, and I think that's going to be interesting to see if they they're not going to have 30 clean sheets next season, no chance, but if they can have that resolve in the Premier League and not playing silly expansive football and expose themselves, that might be an interesting one to see how they do it, and you know, a bit of a blueprint for teams going forward if they can survive.
Okay, we're going to have more football conversation tomorrow with Mark Langdon and Paul Curry, as a texter says. Evan Ferguson really needs to sort out his club situation. Didn't even make the West Ham bench yesterday, so hopefully it is a positive summer for Irish players with some transfers as well. But a massive congratulations to Mo Salah, Liverpool, Arne Slot, and all of the Liverpool fans listening in for their Premier League title win. Hurling is up next, so do stay tuned to Game On.
Game On.
Hurling.
Now, Niall Moran is with us to chat hurling, because we now know that Limerick, Cork, Tipperary, Galway, Kilkenny, Dublin and Kildare and Laois will be competing for the Liam McCarthy Cup. A wry smile from Ruby Walsh before we chat to Niall Moran. Ruby, Kildare hurling is on the rise.
Kildare hurling is on the rise, yeah. Plenty of footballers hanging out of the Tailteann Cup, at least the hurlers are into the Liam McCarthy.
No, it is. Listen, all jokes aside, I know we are going to talk about the provincial championships, Niall, but what an achievement for both Kildare and Laois to be competing in the Liam McCarthy.
Yeah, most definitely. Look, I imagine Laois should have had that expectation of themselves right the way throughout, but again, the nature of their win yesterday was just heroic. And a name, James Duggan, that came to prominence a number of weeks ago in his debut game against Kerry, scored 5 goals. And again, yesterday came up with what'll go down in the annals of Laois hurling is one of the most important goals they've scored in a long, long time. So, but sure, look, Kildare is obviously the talking point. I know a plethora of Kilkenny men have gone up there and done great work, the latest being Brian Dowling. Do you know what I mean? He had great success. Kilkenny is a camogie manager now, bringing that to the hurling fields. And I suppose, look, if they're to take the lead from any club within their own county, I think Naas over the last 25, 30 years have been beating the drum at underage hurling and bringing it all the way through to adults level. And I suppose like that, in essence, has been an inspiration for the wider county. And look, I know it was alluded to yesterday, it's a big county, big playing resources. And I suppose, look, it's obviously they have a lot of expats from other counties there, no different what Dublin would have had in recent years. So, look, it's very, very exciting. And the key to it is, can they finish off the job? So it's definitely going to be a really, really big day in Croke Park ahead of the Leinster final in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, no, most certainly will. Looking at the provincial championship, so we know Limerick and Cork, there are no tickets going on general sale for the Munster final be distributed to the clubs, such as the demand. Tipperary will be competing into the summer. Tipperary, Clare and Waterford, I should say, are out there. Summers are over. Broader picture, did the Munster Championship live up to the hype and expectation for you, Niall Moran?
Ah, sure. Look, I suppose it's probably like some of us at this stage of our life, maybe taking off in a 100-metre race. We start off with a plan when we're flying it for the first 15 yards, and next thing was we're kind of running out of steam near the end of it. And maybe this year's Munster Championship, maybe different previous Munster Championships, that it just probably ran out of a little bit of steam at the end. So obviously the Clare Limerick game yesterday was a dead rubber. Yes, for instance, Clare were excellent, and even the Waterford Cork game, whilst in theory it might have sounded like a very close game, I think the reality of how it played out down below was Cork seemed to always have Waterford at arm's length. And even though there was 42,000 people packed into Páirc Uí Chaoimh, it wasn't until maybe Patrick Horgan's goal went in and that they kind of got a little bit of lead, that the kind of Cork dared to shout for their team. So look, it probably finished in a little kind of below expectation, but in essence the crescendo is yet to come. And if Cork people, they're engaging in a lot of reverse psychology over the last 24 hours from Don Loke to Pat Ryan, I wonder will Cork even come to Limerick given what their words have been. But look, as I said, last week we in Limerick would totally disregard that game against Cork for what it was. It was a Cork no-show, and Limerick happened to be very good on the day. But like in 2 weeks' time, it's going to be a very, very different situation. And we're well aware here in Limerick that how good Cork can be from forwards up. And once they get a couple of guys back from injury, and even yesterday, when you look at it, like it's the perfect fixture for them to come out of going into Munster final. Like they hit 17 wides, you know, still in control, but yet had subs that made an impact off the bench. Jeremy Mellerick and Cormac O'Brien started, both made big impacts. And like, do you know what I mean? So like they're in a really good position going into this Munster final, and all the pressure is back on Limerick. Not that Limerick will mind that, but the pressure has definitely shifted back over to Limerick.
It most certainly has. Look, Niall, you were talking, I suppose, giving Waterford a big chance at the start of the year, and I just thought watching Peter Queeley's interview yesterday after that Cork game, he was so deflated, so downbeat. You can understand why. Do you think they can, Waterford can turn it around, can fulfil that potential that you saw in them? And definitely that you got out of Peter, or felt Peter Queeley knows is there.
Well, as a spectator on the outside, I was very, very frustrated for Waterford watching him. Like, again, yesterday they were 5 points up and then just started making silly mistakes. And they were 5 points up or 5 points to one up after 10 minutes. And yet within 19 minutes, they were 7-6 down. And it was just like an effort at this level. It has to be sustained. And like, maybe as the year wore on, maybe was Division 1B in terms of the physicality, being able to sustain a high intensity effort for 75-80 minutes, was that slightly beyond them? Maybe as it moved on, I think that might have been the case, because look, they started really well against Tipperary last week, that went three to a point up, and yet hit a lot of wides. Yesterday there was much of the same. But the one thing that they can take away from, to build on your question, like, is that they kept on fighting. And I know Peter alluded to that, but they didn't give up, like, you know. And I suppose maybe that had been a sense that maybe, you know, I mean, they threw in the towel maybe last year. And ultimately, look, for to be successful, you need to have a flood of new players coming in. And I just felt this year for Waterford, I just thought a number of their guys, do you know what I mean? They're hitting the 30, 30, 31, 32. Other things in life are going to come in their way. I just felt that there would have been a major, major push. And I think it's very hard for some of those guys to go back and put shoulder to wheel again next year. So ultimately, they will have to build on their underage. It's probably been a barren period at under 20 level, and this year's minors, the first year in a number of years that they've actually been very strong at minor. They're narrowly beaten by Cork in a Munster final, and with three or four excellent players to come out of that. So it does take a little bit of time, and in fairness to Peter Queeley, he's done a great job on them. Like, you know, they are going to be in Division 1A next year, which will build on it. But ultimately, you need new players, and maybe within the Waterford setup, some of the existing players to come back into form. Like we, us, our Aston Gleeson was in the panel this year, but how close was he to fitness? We don't know. Desi Hutchinson, brilliant club player, just not getting to the same level consistently for his county. And there are things that they'll have to build on from within the panel over the next 12 months.
Dublin and Galway. Galway always seemed in control of that game. Michael Donoghue, huge effort in the first half. Will Dublin be disappointed?
They'll be devastated. Really, when you look at it, they had a big win in the first half. And again, they just found themselves for the five points to one down, something of similar sort again. And only Fareen McBride brought them back into the game with a goal. And they probably had a 10-minute period there where, do you know what I mean, they really came into it. But look, this is a game nowadays that's governed by numbers, all right? Ultimately, it's governed by your KPIs. And like we look at the numbers associated with Dublin there yesterday, like, do you know what I mean? There was 43 turnovers. Galway got 12 points off it. Like, Galway dominated on puckouts in terms of scoring from their own restarts and from Dublin's restarts. Conversion rates, Galway at 67%, Dublin at 51%. Look, I could go on and go on and regale stats that have been presented. And, like, really, that in essence, in a game dominated by statistics and numbers, Dublin's numbers didn't match up to where they need to be for the key barometers. And even as you look in from an outsider, the amount of balls that went into their inside forward line that weren't retained, like there must have been 40, 45 balls went in. I'd say they only retained maybe 15 or 16 of them. And like that is a killer for a team associated with really aerial dominance. Like I think they really missed Ronan Hayes. And when he came on, he made a huge difference. And like Dahi Burke lorded the skies there for Galway. But again, you also have to credit Galway. John, we've taken away from them. We've questioned maybe where their hunger was at, where maybe their heart was at, and maybe questioned some of their key players maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago. Yet now, as we move on to the end of the round robin stages, like we see like the Tom Monaghans, John Conor Whelans, David Burke, Dahi Burke, Brian Cannons. These guys are all Ireland medalists from 17. They're now leading the charge. And look, they'll find again, no different to Cork in the Munster final, that they'll have a free shot.
They most certainly will. And I think from even being at Parnell, one of the biggest concerns was just the flatness from Dublin. And perhaps being stuck in a rock and a hard place. Do they want to just work it through the lines? Do they want to get in into Hedgehog? And they were just completely outclassed across the pitch, as you outlined, by Galway. Refereeing decisions and standards have been a talking point across both the Munster and indeed the Leinster Championship, particularly in Parnell Park, where perhaps a few red cards should have been dished out. Like, as a fan of the game and as a former player now, how big of a frustration is it for you to see just the lack of consistency, and would you be concerned with refereeing standards?
Look, first of all, it's a thankless job, and I'm not going to come up here to trying to give out and kind of slag off referees. But look, it has to be consistent, okay? Like even if we take look those sending offs, like there was obviously the Conor Donoghue incident. I suppose given how strong guys are physically now in shape that they're in, like you have to have a duty of care to the players that you play against and play with. All right, so I suppose referees are the only ones entrusted with enforcing that duty of care. So in those cases, you just have to question that when you have a team of officials, 7 in total, you just wonder how nobody managed to pick up on it, or were they afraid of the wrath that might come with a sending off, especially in the case of Conor Donoghue, was like you were in a partisan crowd, you know what I mean, that can't play with referees. I think the one that really maybe frustrated me was, as in that Stephen Bennett one, because like for Peter Queeley, as much as he'd be disappointed with aspects of Waterford's play, like there was a huge opportunity there when Stephen Bennett went through there in the first half. Like it should have been a black card, it should have been a penalty, it would have had a very different impact on the game. And I will preface this by saying though, like that 10 days ago here, or last week, sorry, in a 10 days ago in the Munster under 20 final, Jamie Moylan for Clare committed a very somewhat dubious kind of a free, and he got the harshest penalty possible. Tipperary got a penalty, got a goal from it. He was gone off the pitch for 10 minutes, and I think Tipperary outscored Clare by 2-3 to a point in the same period. It completely turned the game. And you know what I mean? People had a huge issue with the black card being brandished in that case. No, it probably was a very, very harsh one. So, look, it's a very, very hard one to enforce. But I suppose, look, safety of players is paramount within reason. But when you, it's like something like black card is very, very subjective. And look, it's easy in hindsight to make reference to it, what you felt should have or shouldn't have been like.
Yeah, I think it is just gathering momentum in terms of the frustration that the black card seems to be non-existent at the moment. And just on the playing side of things as well, Antrim relegated to the Joe McDonagh, there seemed to be just an air of resignation from the last couple of weeks that this was always going to be the case and losing out to Offaly. We talk about the delight of Kildare and Laois, and they're going to be competing in the Liam McCarthy. How damaging is it for Antrim hurling to be going back down to the Joe McDonagh, or is it a case of, listen, lads, they'll be grand, they'll bounce straight back up?
I wouldn't say that. You never take anything for granted. Like, Offaly will be testament to that. You know what I mean? They found themselves in the third tier of hurling and only 4 days. Such a dominant underage group coming the last few years. It gave them great hope. They might still be down in the third tier. And for Antrim, I suppose, look, at underage level, like, they haven't had those kind of one-off teams that might have gotten to an All-Ireland minor semi-final. So it is a big worry to be down there. And there has great work has been done by Darren Gleeson and co. over the last number of years, and like, they have a number of brilliant players, Paddy Burke, James McNaughton, Keenan Malloy, all these guys. But now you throw the carrot to them next year that you're going to be operating in, you know, lower level hurling, you know what I mean, away from the limelight. It doesn't become as attractive anymore. And when you're trying to encourage players to play, which is an issue for managers in all counties, tier one counties included, it becomes a harder task for Davey. And look, I suppose, Davey will always be in the spotlight, and whatever team he's over and will always be in the spotlight because of it. And it's like, some of the criticism that he and some of the commentary that he receives is often quite unfair as well. But it's the one thing over the last number of games that has infiltrated him as being ill-disciplined. Like, they've had a number of sending offs, which we now know in today's game you just can't carry. And that's never a good sign when discipline is on the pitch is poor. And I can't speak for off because I don't know enough about Antrim, but like, that's something that comes from when you have a discipline set up from within, you have it on the pitch, and results will tend to be a lot better as a result of it. So look, that's probably the first thing that they can address, which is within their own control. And look, I hope to see Antrim back as quickly as possible, and no different than anyone else. I'd love to see the expansion into, you know what I mean, have a couple of more tier one teams. What about it? And it probably also comes back to the issue here, lads. This championship needs to be spread out. Like, what I'd say, we probably have 80% of our games are over now, and a lot of spectators haven't seen 20% of them because they're all clashing with each other. Like, and let's just open it up a little bit more. I am beating the drum on that one, but like, we do need to see the best hurlers in the country over a sustained period of time, not in such a kind of a six week window, which we did, like, you know.
Game on. Hurling.
That was Niall Moran speaking to us a little bit earlier. We will have Osna O'Malley on the show tomorrow to chat Gaelic football, but now it is time to chat rugby with Stephen Ferris, because Bordeaux were crowned Kings of Europe for the first time as they combined precise finishing with relentless forward power to beat Northampton 28-20 in a tense and often chaotic Champions Cup final. Stephen Ferris, how impressed were you with the manner of victory for Bordeaux?
Yeah, first of all, I think it was a really good game. Both sides, you know, going at it hammer and tong, 20 points each at half time, and you felt that Bordeaux were going to have, a little bit too much in the second half, and that proved the case. And it, a couple of boys they brought on off the bench, it made a bit of an impact, but I thought as a spectacle, it was really, really top drawer. The Principality Stadium always puts on a show, with probably the best rugby stadium in the world. I know that's been banded about this week, and I've been very fortunate to play there in big games, and it sure does send shivers down your spine, because it's just a wonderful place to play rugby. So yeah, you know, fair play to Northampton. They put up a good fight, and they were beaten by the better side on the day in Bordeaux, and I think all in all, Bordeaux deserved to win the Champions Cup this season.
Stephen, I loved the flair of Mathieu Jalibert and how he conducted the game. At 10 playing like that, it just inspires the whole team.
Yeah, it does. I thought he was good, really good for 40 minutes, but he made a bundle of mistakes as well. But that's been pretty evident the whole way through Bordeaux's game all season long. It's, you know, they're not scared of making mistakes. They're not scared of throwing offloads, whether they break 50-50 or not. And they back themselves to score more points than the opposition. And ultimately, that's what gets him, you know, over the line and the big wins. So, you know, Jalibert was absolutely on it. He was on it for 40 minutes or so. He went through a 20-minute spell where things didn't go his way. But yeah, even his tackling's very strong. He made a couple of turnovers over the ball, and obviously his running game and, you know, his chip kicking game as well is very impressive. So, yeah, he certainly got the big boys running around the pitch, and I thought Moa Fana, who was playing 13, was exceptional as well. And outside him, and obviously BLBRE and Damien Pinot, who have pace to burn, you want to get the ball into their hands as often as possible. But there's also a few other, and I know you're maybe touching on it, a few controversial decisions by the referee, both on the Friday night in the Challenge Cup and on the big occasion on the Saturday. And yeah, really interesting with the yellow, going with the yellow cards. And I thought Mamahoud Diaby was really, really fortunate to stay on the pitch with that high tackle. But as Ed Price was the other guy in Northampton. He got a yellow card as well, and there was a little bit more consistency there. But on another day, as a head coach, you need those decisions to go for you, and unfortunately for Northampton, they didn't go for them on Saturday afternoon.
What did you make of his two calls in Pollock then? I thought he absolutely nailed them.
Yeah. I thought. I actually was sent a text message saying, what's this referee up to? Like, you know, it seems to be making a wrong call, and then all of a sudden it goes to the TMO for it to be brought back. And like, I have no problem with that. As a player on the pitch there, you just want the right call to be made. And I thought more often than not, 9 times out of 10, that, listen, it could easily have been a red card for Derby. It wasn't. You get on with it. And obviously I mentioned there about Price as well, could easily went for him. But no, I thought all in all, the referee was very strong. And between him and his assistant referees and the TMO, I thought they did a pretty good job. And, you know, in a big final like that, Ruby, you want to keep the game flowing as much as possible too. You don't want it stop-start. You don't want it to be a drab spectacle. You want people to tune in. And I thought even, the celebrations after the game, I think it's all positive. Like, it's good for the game. You want a bit of slagging of the opposition, so if they meet again in the Champions Cup, that there's going to be a bit more rivalry. You know, the mimicking of Pollock with, taking each other's pulses in the changing room while they were smoking a cigar and having a beer. Like, I thought that's brilliant, and that's what you want to see on social media, and that's what kids these days want to see, is, you know, a bit of spice and a bit of flair and a bit of rivalry between teams. And, you know, hopefully that's going to be even better going forward.
From an Irish perspective, for the fifth year in a row, the Champions Cup has been won by a French team. Is this a concern, Stephen?
Yeah, I think it is. If you're a Leinster rugby player, I don't think the other three provinces have been at the top table for quite some time. Obviously, Munster might disagree with that with their URC win, but all in all, I think, you know, Leinster be just so bitterly disappointed that they haven't been able to get one of the finals over the line over the last few years, and they need to find a way. They have to find a way. And, you know, there's all the chat of bringing in certain players. I know we'll not go down that route tonight. But, I think all in all, there seems to be a bit of a dip in Irish rugby. And the Sevens programme losing that has obviously been a huge talking point over the last couple of weeks. You know, where they finished in the Six Nations, some of the players' form, obviously Leinster buying out, how the women's game is going, where the budgets are. So I think when you add it all together, lads, it's really disappointing that, you know, yet again we're looking at heading into the end of the season with only the URC to fight for, and obviously no Six Nations either, and also with a women's game.
Yeah, we will be previewing those URC playoff matches later in the week. That is all we have time for. Stephen Ferris, thank you very much. Marie Crowe is back tomorrow with your good self, Ruby. You'll be joined by Austin O'Malley, Paul Corey, Mark Langdon, and plenty more besides. So lots to look forward to. Big thanks to Ronan Lawler, this evening's producer. Lorelei Davis was our broadcast coordinator. Stay tuned to 2FM because the brilliant Beda Da Silva is up next with the new music show. For myself, Ruby, and all of the Game On team, have a lovely evening.